Good morning, one and all. It's great to see everybody. Anyone is not need a translation from English? You should talk to Boom. On the server in English. Okay. I'm very happy that a few of you that were also at the beginning, I just introduced Giovanni, my friend, and that I'm very happy and feel very grateful that you are ready to be with us this morning. One or two sentences where two of us met. It was in the late 90s in Israel and in India. We met in rainbow circles. Already then, 20 years ago, Giovanni was one of the elders of the European rainbow family. And I'm not talking necessarily about age. And also in Dharma circles, Buddha Dharma circles, mostly in India, Bodh Gaya, Sarnath, we spent quite time together. Actually, Giovanni know both Dasi and myself before we were Dasi and myself. For many years I didn't see Giovanni. I knew that he resided after long years of being nomad. I hope he will say a few words about it later in Greece. And a year and a half ago, we were, as few of you know, we went to the Italian Rainbow Gathering. And we had there a lot of very old friends, old timers, like Stephen calls it. And a lot of us said, where is Giovanni? Where is Giovanni? And Giovanni didn't come. And a few months after that, he contacted me and said, I'm in my way to Israel. And about half a year ago, he came and was and spent also time in Galil and in the Galilee, which is a special place for him. And I hope you'll say a few words about it later. And he went and we said, as we always say in the rainbow circle, see you in 5 minutes, knowing that it might take again 15 years or so, but he's here back again. And we had some quite nice and meaningful time together. And I had the idea that I felt that I really want him to come and to be with us in this circle. And why? Mostly because I wanted to Lashvitz. To Lashvitz is from show off. I'm proud of the thought that he's seeing me as a friend of him. But besides that, I think that if he will share just few of his insights and the way he sees things regarding what we are here about the world, life, being in the world, spirituality, and sharing a bit of his journey, which is very inspiring, I think it could be, there are a lot of gifts for all of us here. So what I thought to begin with is kind of start to develop a dialogue between us two and invite you for few areas in your life, your past, and let's see what will emerge, and from that it will become questions and answers or whatever. Okay with you?
It's okay. Good morning, everybody. I'm honored to be here. Let's have a good time together, good journey. We already have, so I don't have to say more.
So maybe the most natural or obvious place to start from is saying a few words about where you're from, where you're born, about your young years.
It's always very difficult to start. So we never know where to go, where to start. Talking about the I is always something weird, you know, because we're talking about ourselves, so it takes us away from the unity. But I'm born in Switzerland. I'm from Italian parents who, after the Second World War, went to Switzerland to work. Now Europe is overcrowded, meet foreigners from all over the world trying to take refuge in Europe. The Europeans have forgotten after the war. Everybody was escaping from the countries to found new land. You know, also, your tribe went to new shores. You came back to Israel after a long time. Italians had a very hard time also, making a lot of mistakes, paying a lot of price for everything what we're doing. We always have to pay price. Every action we do is always good to think about, do I react now or wait and see what's happening. So my parents had to go out of Italy to found food and shelter and work, and so I born in Switzerland, grow up in Switzerland. I speak better Swiss German than I speak Italian, actually. So for Italians I'm Swiss, for the Swiss I'm Italian. So I never really was, I grew up in this distraction of looking for my identity. And I think all the people who are born in the 50s and 60s, we were all looking for, I'm born in the 50s, so we were looking for identity and starting something new, trying to figure out what is wrong. Getting totally lost on our looking around what is wrong and what is right, how we should change the world. You know, I'm a child of the hippie generation. We got lost. We had a lot of ideas, and when we are young, we have a lot of ideas how we want to change the world.
Can you say a word about your past before you became a hippie and went off?
I became a hippie actually with 14 years. Yes. So my first time I smoked the joint, and the first year I also took my first LSD. It was in our time very fashion, not that really, like, we were looking for new borders. And I got very lost in it actually, also in drugs. I'm an ex-junkie also, so I made also quite an experience with heroin. And, you know, you want to know more, because I have a very crazy life, you know. I ran away from home at 16 and a half. I went in to live in this time. There were a lot of, now you live in a community. Yeah. You experience monkhood, or just be together. We were doing this also, we were just a little bit more wild in it. You know. I don't know what to say else. With 18, I went to Greece to have first time out of my country. I met a nice, beautiful woman from Australia, and everybody was going, oh, India, who just came back from India. So I went to Athens and I took a bus.
What year are we talking about?
What? We're talking about 75, yeah. Yeah. Talking about 75, there were some hippie buses going up and down from India to London and stopping Amsterdam, Athens and so forth. And hippies were just jumping on buses, and you were traveling with 40, 50 hippies through Europe, going into direction the the other side of the breaking through to the other side, like Jim Morrison liked it to say. Yeah. Got lost in drugs, heroin, and nearly died in India. I met one of my teachers in India many in the 90s, and she was in the same year in India, and she made the spiritual path. Mm-hmm. I got lost on my path. I didn't have the chance. She, same age like me, she went directly. She went to the beach to swim in Goa. This time there was not the Goa voice today, there was nothing. And she went to swim naked, because we were going all naked to swim. And she came out of the water, everything was gone. Passport, money, clothes. So she stand there in India with nothing. Absolutely nothing. Yeah. And a Baba walked by, Naga Baba. Naga Baba is somebody who is naked. Actually just have a shawl, they're not supposed to have every belongings. Like Buddha was walking, like Jesus, Yeshua was walking, they were devoted to no attachment. And he told her, come with me, he gave her a longing. She covered and she followed him for 20 years actually. She didn't left, she stayed secretly in India and became a Nagamata. Female naked Baba, Matas, and became a very wild Hanuman devotee. Oh, they're very tough. And I saw her once, she took off her jotas and they were going till the ground. So she never cut her hair from the moment she got shaved. They got shaved like in all the traditions, and then you never cut your hair again. Nuffer or because I came.
There might be after if people.
Yeah. I have to, sorry. I have to finish. So one founds a spiritual path and makes a choice, and the other didn't make the choice, because I met my Baba also in Amritsar on the entrance to Pakistan. And he made to me like this, to come with him, and I didn't went with him. So I could have maybe have a very easier journey if I would follow him. But I had to go through the dark side. I had to go into the dark hole, actually, of experience the other side. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to finish that part. But you guiding, because I can get lost, yeah.
I kind of have two tracks in mind, follow whatever feels right to you. Mm. One is the question, when did you come across the Buddha Dharma? And the other track is to jump to recent years and ask you where you live now, about your life now. Are you a Buddhist? Which is something very strong in the language of this place. So,
maybe I can wrap it together in a few words. I don't want to bother you and to annoy you. I come out of a generation, we were just touching spirituality. It was something, a taboo. I think in old traditions, Jewish, Christian, I'm a Christian background, and I'm still a Christian. Yeah. Even if I would say I'm a Christian Buddhist. I have another view about these names. Don't put it in boxes. When I came out of drugs and everything, I left everything. I went for 3 days to Germany and I never came back to Switzerland. I think I came back after more than 10 years back to Switzerland. So I left for 3 days Switzerland to go to Germany to visit somebody, and I never came back. This is a part of learning that when you make a first step, the divine takes a thousand steps with you. It's just surrendering, letting go, and to trust, to move on. I met the Buddha through a very strange coincidence. 1990, I had the honor in this time, it was not known, it was totally something new in Europe. In America it was already moving a little bit, but it was a whispering in the wind. I heard about Reiki and got my first initiation in Reiki, who is a Buddhist path, actually. It's the path of the Buddha of lapis lazuli. Of course, totally wrong teached in Europe. We make a sect out of it or whatever, but it's actually was a Tibetan Buddhist line who Mikao Sui brought only for Buddhists teaching, actually. Those who received the initiation into the line, they had to make the vow to take refuge in the Buddha. And I took this refuge in the Buddha. And today, after all these years, I see also the reason why originally it was not given this kind of powerful initiations on somebody who is just wants to do healing or wants to do something. And I met through this, the little I, Giovanni, met the Buddha through a very strange corner. And changed my life actually upside down. This was actually in the same year I met the Buddha. I made the Rainbow Family, 1991. I went to my first gathering and I was like, oh, wow, the hippies are still around also in the 90s. You know, we didn't die, we're still around. There is still some of us who are warriors and children of the light and trying to play together. Kindergarten, Rainbow for me is a totally kindergarten, it's a totally confusion. So, and then my journey started. I started to start to walk the Dharma with consciousness. I started to learn from my brothers and sisters who already was a little further on the path, what I can take, from who I can take. And slowly starting to reflect on what was going on. I had a very bad trauma from the 70s of India, so I decided in the end of the 70s I never will go back to India. And 1994, a man who just came out of a gathering, we went to the Dead Sea, close to Qumran.
I'm very you've been with the Rainbow to gatherings in Israel in the early 90s?
Yes, yes. I came actually in the second wave to Israel. The first wave, it were, I think, very few Europeans came in, was introduction, and the second wave we came with more than 50 people from all over the world to Israel and putting seeds here to make the Rainbow Family. And that just came now for, it's funny, today I go for one day to the Rainbow Gathering like a visitor and just watch a little bit, you know, and see that the seed that we put in the ground, the dream we put, started to make a lot of fruits in Israel. You know, I have seen clearly in a totally different perspective. Umadama was not existing. 25 years we started there to put the seed and saw that the seed spread down here. Now it's a Dharma hall here and all these things. So
you were actually part of the first people who went to Umadama, what we call Adama.
Yes, I'm Adama. How do you call it? Adama.
Adama.
Adama. We were calling it Adama. Actually, I think, without making myself interesting, please don't misunderstand, I'm just sharing here now. I think I'm the first person who offered blood on the land. He really insisted at the rainbow gathering to show me the piece of land who he was thinking to buy. And I stepped on this land and we say, I had my first fire on Adama and with offer.
Wow.
And I've been with offer together when he made the final deal with the Sheikh up by the Druze village for the land to buy. Or the last part of the payment, I was having the honor.
I wouldn't ask you if you saw how much was it.
No, I really don't care about it. I don't care about money so much.
You will tell us a bit more about your don't care about money, because I think it's interesting as well. But were you part of the rainbow caravan, the peace caravan to Jordan?
Yes, we walked also.
Tell us a bit about the vision, the message.
As I say, we...
Everybody knows generally what are rainbow gatherings.
It's just a mad gathering of hippies, you know, like coming together and trying to understand that there is no, that there is nothing separating us, that we are oneness. And some people are going to oneness through a satsang, a family. Sangha. Thank you. My language got a little bit rusted. Through the Sangha, and there is other Sanghas, they are like Rainbow Family, they are also a family. A Sangha is a family, it's a unity of people who have a similar search, a similar path to go somewhere. So the Rainbow is same like a Sangha, looking to go somewhere to get, helping each one to understand who I am and what is the reason why I'm here. It's just a little bit more wide, with no structure. I think Sanghas are much more healthy. Because it's more structure, and I
if
think
I just may, gatherings that takes place in nature, off grid, off the system, no electricity, all the cultural things that the system let us, the rainbow gatherings happen out in nature. There is just now happened one not far from Eidon, and apologies.
Anyway,
the caravan
comes out of the spiritual search also inside the rainbow, who is a really confused way of living our spirituality, because there is a lot of influences, you know, from different points of views, yoga, Reiki, little bit Vipassana, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. So, but we had always a strong vision, and rainbow is very, 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 very strong, because it has no rules, and it takes he's triggering something in us to break with the old pattern. You know, in the Sangha, many times it takes us a long time because we are dealing only with ourselves. Many times in the beginning of Vipassana or any kind of buddhistic or mystical practices, we are go first within to find out who we are, and we are not dealing with the out first. And but the rainbow is actually you dealing with yourself, but in the same time you're dealing with all the craziness and with the negativity and the fears and the traumas who everybody else deals also with. And in the Sangha you sit silently and you deal within and you go to the teacher and you pass it on, but all the rest don't know what the fuck is happening to me. Sorry for the word, but it's really happening like this. I think if we really go a little deeper into ourselves, we found out there is a lot of things hidden deep within ourselves. Takes a long time to take it out. You know, we can get also lost there. This is another going into meditation. So we decided to make a peace gathering, a peace caravan, because the rainbow is very proud. You know, we are warriors. You know, we are the children of the light. You know, we are the the prophecies of the natives it makes. But when you go in a rainbow, you see it's a big of chaos, you know, like you don't really know the structure. It's everybody tries to be a chief or control the others, or those who just looks for a master and the guru, or those who just looks to have a nice sex story, or somebody who's really just lost and just tries to go off his psychopharmas, because he's mostly young people in your ages who are trying to figure out what I'm really doing here, why I'm here on this earth, how I can deal with this earth, what is going on. And we decide to make a peace caravan to Jordan, to bring peace between Israel and Jordan, between Jews and Arabs, and Jews and Arabs and Christians, and whatever we like to be, or whatever flag we like to hold. And we had a really beautiful experience, because we had a strong group who were meditating every day. So in a very difficult climate, because we were walking in the winter, I think December or January, I don't remember. We walked more than 350 kilometers through the desert. We started on the Dead Sea, and we had two volunteer cars who were back putting all the bags. So we were making walking meditation. And in this walking, we made a pilgrimage with the idea to bring peace. You know? There is also been made a film out of it, actually. In the end, we gave him a particular title. Why we gave the title Peace Begins With Me? Because on this journey, we were, if I counted it right then, because I tried to figure out, we were not so many people, we were mostly 80 people. People were coming and going, walking a few days with us, and then leaving again. But the main crew was more or less 70 people walking constantly all the way to Jordan. And on the way, we were seeing Germans with Jews, Christians with Muslims. We had also a small group of Palestinians from Gaza, but we had a hard time to bring them in, actually. The half of them been blocked to come to walk with us, but a few managed to walk a few days, but they got a special permission to come from Gaza to walk with us a few days. And there was all these different French with German, and I don't know if you know, Germans and French have also a lot of stories between them, you know. And other Americans, we had somebody from Thailand, me from Switzerland, we had Italians, they were real Italians, because I have even an Italian passport, but I'm not a real Italian. And so we had from all over the world people. We were counting 27 nations walking to Jordan together. And on the way, a lot of frictions happening. I think it happens in the Sangha also, there is frictions. Sometimes, you know, there is like observing the others, or I've been living in monasteries. There is jealousies also from monks and nuns in all the traditions. Who is stronger, who meditates more, who can longer sit silently or quietly, and never get tricked of somebody who sits very peacefully there. You have no idea what's really going on. Many times you're so peacefully because you're so full of things within that you cannot even move a little finger. And then the others say, wow, you were sitting so peacefully. And say, no, I went through deep, deep shit in myself. You know, I could not even move anymore because I was so involved with what was going on inside. Anyway, and we found out actually that we didn't have peace between each one, and that we didn't even have peace within ourselves. And we arrived in Eilat, and we were on the beach. We didn't have money anymore to put go to the Jordan. Half of the people didn't have money to cross the border because it cost money. Mm-hmm. You know, money is the rule of the world. And so we had the last meeting, and many people were ready to go home. And then through some divine gift, suddenly money appeared, and we could bring everybody over the border. So money is energy, and if the intentions is clear, the energy just arrives. If it's not clear, energy will not arrive, and you desperately try to collect money, and it just slips between the hands. It's like, money is like sand, you know, you take sand and it just slips between your hand, and you try desperately to fill it up and fill up. The Dalai Lama said once, the Western man lives like he will never die, and dies and he have never lived. You know? And he tries everything to collect money, to possessions, and then he gets very sick and he has to spend everything because he gets so sick from accumulating all this material, the samsara, this illusion, world of illusion. So we arrived there and we found out actually that we had to start to make peace with this, and it's really beautiful experience. One of my most beautiful experiences in my life, to be in the Middle East in the 90s, I think some of you were very small or maybe not even born, I don't know. It was a very difficult time in Israel, there was a lot of bombing.
What year was the peace caravan? Was it 94?
Pardon?
What year did you do it?
I don't remember actually. I think it was here now somebody saying
93.
So I don't remember actually, yes.
2000, so. The second intifada went on.
What?
Okay. So early 90s, you did this peace caravan.
Yes, yes, yeah. But I don't really sure when we did it. Honestly, me, I'm not looking so much the dates, so I'm just flowing in this year. I was just a very bhikkhu, living from one bag. I traveled before I met my wife, and finally wanted to leave the world to go in a monastery to live. In this moment, 45 years, I met my wife, actually, in the time I was very ready. And thereafter, I realized I've been half of my life actually already a monk, just not with the stamp on it, the Dior, with the dressing of a monk. What else? I don't know, I can get lost.
When you're mentioning this, it's bringing me the question, just when you were talking about the caravan, which I was not taking part in, I remember, and you might see there is a poster that promoting the film about the caravan and what it says. It's a very strong saying. It says, fighting for peace is like fucking for virginity. That's kind of the message that came from in the poster, at least, of this caravan. I will not ask you to comment.
No, it was Molly who put that comment. It was a little bit rude for me, but
yeah,
it's a language I don't like so much. But sometimes we have to use this word when it's proper.
Mentioning money and your monk-like way of life, can you say, if you feel comfortable to, say a few words about the way you that enable you to make your living all of these years?
Yeah, when I come back to this part, when I was in Germany, I'm a painter and sculptures. I make this kind of things sometimes. Now I started again a little bit to work harder. In the beginning of the 90s, I had a small atelier in Colonia, in Germany. This was the time I met Reiki, I met Buddha, I met things. I was very much into shamanism. So it's not something new, shamanism. It was already in the past. I was fully into that. Also into black magic and everything. I did a little bit everything, I'm sorry. I was a very nasty boy. And one day I had a vision, I decided I want to live without money. I don't want money anymore be a purpose in my life. And it was the best decision I ever did in my life, honestly, because that decision made me to that what I am today. I have a lot of peace with this. it's not stressing me anymore. I learned my path as a monk, as a walking monk, who I walked more than 12 years with only my backpack and my sleeping bag, with no house, no fixed place.
For 12 years?
Hmm?
For 12 years?
12 years, wow. More or less. Yeah. 11 full, and then the 12th was... But still doing it today, actually, in a way. I'm still around, nasty. I just decided I just go with the flow. And this came in the moment when I met the rainbow. I went back with everything on donation, and there's a magic hat who goes around, same like in the Buddhistic way, living from donations. So I started to learn to make music on the street, and with music I made my donations. And even later, when I became a Reiki teacher, I was still in Tel Aviv or in Jerusalem when I was working here in Israel, working with my didgeridoo or with my guitar on the street. And my students were coming from totally normal life, some people very rich, you know, with big cars and whatever, and seeing me on the floor standing in the middle of the shuk in Tel Aviv or in Jerusalem playing instrument and begging, actually, for them was very, very shocking. They couldn't really deal with it. But I had to make my living. I just started to live from... not very much from donation in the beginning. In the beginning, in the first years, I was just living from trust. Something will come on my way. A bed, a shelter, food. And we were traveling like gypsies through whole Europe with the rainbow, and just trusting, and somehow going to markets, in the end of the markets, and collecting the fruits on the floor, and cooking, and to be sure that we don't get hepatitis or yellow fever or whatever, and amoebias, and sharing everything. I lived a few years in a community in Spain, in the Sierra Nevada, coming, going, but I had a fixed place in the teepee, and we were having some days when we really didn't have food at all, and we were seeing everybody hanging on an almond tree and breaking the almonds to get something nourishing, because we really didn't have money, because nobody wanted to leave paradise, because we were really living in a paradise. Hippies, naked, day and night, everybody together, everybody had his place. We had a big meeting place, like a sangha. We were cooking together, we were sharing even the tobacco. The women's we were not sharing, and the men's, not like in the old time, but all the rest we were sharing. And sometimes it took days till somebody had the courage to go down to make some street music, to bring some food. And then I remember these moments. Many times it was ridiculous things they brought back. They were knowing we were all hungry, but they were bringing a piece of chocolate. And we were 30, 20, 25, 30 people. So what we were doing, and we know normally today we get the chocolate, see, silently we have it somewhere, we look a film or whatever, and we, oh, I eat the whole chocolate. You know? And we don't even think about to share this with somebody. You know? Even in the rainbow, I see many people have a lot of, some of you being there, everybody has stored food in his tent. That's why we eat in the afternoon so late, because already everybody has eaten. You know? So for me, the rainbow was hard times, because I didn't have money to have a store, so I had to work. I had to make a karma yoga. So I started to do work. You know? I started to offer myself for this what I received, because I learned to receive means actually also to give. It's a giving and receiving. If you just give, you cannot live the life of divine blessing, or the universe takes care of you. The universe don't take care of somebody who is selfish, strangely. I don't know why. It doesn't, does it? Yeah. But those who take care for the others, the angels, the divine, whatever you want to call it, God takes care suddenly. Because he sees you put an input, you make actions. Yeah. You give something from yourself, even when you're not in the mood. Yeah. And giving means actually just to to hug somebody who is sad, or to see the pain of somebody, to be close to this person and to cuddle, or just to hold a hand, or just to sit with this person in silence and show you're not alone. So there's many different ways of giving. So I learned to trust. Yeah. It's actually all the Buddha teach me, and Yeshua teach me. I'm a very strong disciple of Yeshua, because I think for Jews it's very sad that you never had the chance really to meet him, because your tradition had taught you that Christianity is evil, and it was, and still sometimes is, because not following the teaching. But I think in Buddhism it's the same as in Hinduism. If you've been in India, you would be surprised how much corruption it is in the ashrams, in the temples, and controlling people with money, or with playing the Baba or the Guru.
You actually serves now in the Christian world in Santorini, right?
Yes, I'm.
What do you do there?
Oh, it's very funny. I make a very crazy job, traveling all around the world and living on donations. I started to teach Reiki, so I never made a price. I don't take money for treatments. I don't believe that healing should be paid. I learned this from my Mataji in India. You don't pay.
That's what do all the Reiki masters?
No, I think I'm the only one. I've gotten many times, but I'm not a Reiki master anymore. I stepped out of this. But in these years, I received donations for the teaching to make my living. And then I decided to stop with Reiki. And in Europe, I started to do something else, Touch of Light. Following teachings of Yeshua and the Essenes in Qumran, and I started to have very few students, because I was making something new, and also in Europe Jesus is really not well seen. You can give, can be Buddhist, you can be Hindu, you have a packed room. If you want to speak about Jesus or Yeshua and his true teaching, loving kindness and compassion, love your neighbor as thyself, you have an empty room. Yeah. And you have people who are judging you. So I had suddenly not anymore enough donations to do my living. My wife supported me all these years so that I can go on living in this way. And then I had a moment. I need to repay also my wife, and my friend, the priest, told me, we have a job in the Catholic Church, and after 58 years, 3 years ago, and I'm 61, I started to clean the churches. You know, so now I'm working in the church, I clean the toilets, you know, I've been a Reiki teacher, I've been known all over the world, I have a lot of friends, people are really give me a lot of respect. And I found me suddenly again where I started, cleaning toilets, cleaning little things, you know, taking care for the tourists that they will go in a temple and they respect the temple. You know. And today I'm very grateful for that, because God somehow, the divine spirit, always puts you back, that you remind in the simplicity, that you don't... my angels, they always take the carpet under my feet away when I got too much the nose up. You know, so they come and take me. Oh, you know. Yeah, I think I have said that more than enough. Sorry for the talking.
I want to open it to see if there are any comments or questions that are arising for people. One last thing might be in the end, but one last thing. If you shared with me a few days ago something that Mother Teresa said that touched me really deeply, when a journalist asked her a question. Mm-hmm. Do you remember what it was?
Just I want to, can I wrap it a little bit? In my path, when I went away from the Buddhist way of thinking, that's why I say I'm a Christian Buddhist, I started to search also in Christianity and in Judaism, because Yeshua was a Jew. Many people forget that he was a rabbi. You know. I started to search in the Jewish and the Christian mystics to go deeper inside, to understand. The Dalai Lama said once, why you want to take my religion? You're not growing up in this religion. You will never understood, you will never truly, profoundly understand the way as a Tibetan Buddhist thinks and acts, because it's not in your genes. You know, if you cannot take the teaching and transform it into your own background, somehow you're missing the path. You know, so it's not to become a Buddhist, but to take Buddha's teaching, how we say, truly understand what he really wants to teach. I think Buddha didn't want to teach a religion, as Jesus didn't want to teach a religion. He teach the path. You know. So when I started to go into the mystics, I found out all the teachers, all the mystics from all over the world, those who have touched or are enlightened. It's a word I hate to say, the word enlightenment, because I think we are all constantly enlightened. You know, we have all moments of enlightenment. Sri Sri Yukteswar, the teacher of Yogananda, said once to Yogananda, it's easy to get enlightened, it's very difficult to hold it. You know, it made a big impression on me when I read this, what the Yogananda writes in his biography, what his teacher says, it's easy to get enlightened. We're very hard working to get enlightened. But when we get enlightened, what we do with the enlightenment, it's actually, that's the beginning of the Dharma. And so the mystics, they all go to an empty place, to the place of silence. And how they got there to this empty silence, because I was always figuring out how the Buddha and the Jesus and the other big teachers came, they all went to the valley of darkness. You know, this is a prayer, a Jewish prayer, the Lord is my shepherd, I do not fear. I think you, some of you maybe remember this psalm, this beautiful psalm, it is a very spiritual and a very meditative thing. If you really meditate on this, the Lord is my teacher, teaches about trust, surrendering, it teaches also about know it, to trust in the financial, you know, that the Lord always takes care, but he guides me also through the valley of darkness, and I do not fear. And what is the darkness? It's the fear within. When we go in silence, we go in a dark place first. The bardo, we go into an empty place, and this place can be filled with the silence of God, or it can be filled with the voices of the demons, you know, I would call it like this, and the demons are within, they are not outside. So Mother Teresa, being a journalist, a reporter to her, and asked her, what are you doing when you pray? Because I see that you're a very special woman, and Mother Teresa looks at this man and says, nothing, I'm listening. And the journalist was a little bit shocked, because we have also the praxis of the mala. You know, this is for us a preparation to go into silence. You know, so in all the traditions, also Sufis doing it, Muslims doing it, Jews do it in another way. But the preparation of going, the Kabbalist goes in a place where there is nothing anymore. And she says to him. And he asked her, what God says to you then when you are listening? And she looks at him, nothing, he's also listening. And there I understood that Mother Teresa is an enlightened person. Not with words, but with deeds. The enlightenment of Mother Teresa have stunned me. I worked in her hospital for a while. I never met her. I had the chance to meet her. I refused to meet her. I didn't want to meet another saint. I'm not interested to meet saints. I'm more interested to hear their teaching. And her teaching has done a lot in my life, because she taught karma yoga, totally devotion. When somebody is dying, just hold his hand. When somebody has pain, just be with him. If somebody needs to be bandaged, bandage the person. If somebody needs food, give him food. If somebody needs clothes, take your clothes and give it to him. The Buddha did it. Yeshua did it. They're all teaching this. Do we hear their teaching? Maybe the world will be look different if we would share what we have, and not to be worried what we're wearing tomorrow, on how many beautiful clothes we can wear, because we come naked and we go naked. That's all. You know.
Given yes. The words silent,
yes.
If you rearrange the letters, it spells listen.
Bravo.
So when we're in silence, we are literally listening.
Mm, beautiful. I didn't thought
yeah.
about that.
Isn't that
thank you for helping.
Yeah. Just rearrange the letters.
It's literally, literally.
It's literally, the
yeah.
whole.
Yeah,
it's magic. It's the Gematria of English.
And listening means also to be, that's what I'm going through in the moment is, many times when we are meditating, we are too much egocentric. We are living the inner, and the teachers that teach us to go out there, that means actually to, for me, it meant actually what I'm experiencing is this connecting with nature. They all walked strangely. They were not fixed. Buddha never stayed in one sangha. He created sanghas and then he left. He never stayed. And Jesus was all, if you read his teaching, he was walking through all. For me to be in the Galilee, it makes me so happy. I'm in the moment also a little bit sick. I had a little bit really bad cold in Italy, and bronchitis and everything. And I have some small attachments to tobacco and stuff like this, you know. And when I'm here, I remember that he was walking, when I read his books, he was walking all the Galilee, all the Judah, everywhere, and sharing his teaching, the Buddha the same. And then I realized that they were actually not separating the outer from the inner, but uniting the inner with the outer and becoming part of everything. And it changed totally my way of view, of meditation, and of the oneness, and that if we deny the outer, we will never be able to accept the inner, because we have denied already this egocentric meditation. Who I see many people scares me a lot, and they got really lost in their meditation because they're not living there outside. It becomes a selfish thing. You know, I want to get enlightened. And sitting for 10 hours every day don't enlighten you at all. Better a half hour properly and enjoy the day than 10 hours sitting for nothing. You know, like just having wound release. So
I wonder if I find so much inspiration in what you bring.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if one of you guys, because Giovanni heard a little from me about this place, about Mashiv Nefesh, which as we all know, it's not a place of 10 hours of meditation. So if anyone wants to share something from his experience, giving the flavor of that place, is that, as I tell you a lot of times, I'm so jealous that will not exist at the time when I was going communities and meditation centers.
Sorry, I don't relate to your meditation. I'm very touched by your story, by your life. And think when I'm listening to it, for me it's a lot about freedom. It's a lot about freedom. Listening to what really touches the heart and not judging it in terms of how society looks at it, but going for it. Doesn't matter if it's the money issue or if it's now Christianity or it's going with a peace camp to Jordan. It's listening to the voice and the freedom to follow it. And I realize, and it's nice, I will share with you, that I think I feel especially touched being a German living in Israel, coming from a Christian background, studied a lot of mystics, and having done peace activities, now being here. So it's like, somehow it's funny to say, maybe it's also about generations, like feeling very much at home, listening to the story, and being reminded, you know, being reminded of it's maybe one of the most deep dreams, I mean night dreams. Which came back many times was simply seeing myself as a very old woman walking with nothing more than a mattress. It's like, and I still don't know. Sometimes I did it, walking with nothing, but maybe it's also music. If it's an image, you know, of real freedom. Or it's something which shows a way of really of living. So I'm very grateful for touching all these places and deep places in the heart and the soul or everything. So I leave it to you. Sharing fun, see if you like.
Can I say something? In Europe, in the last years, we have a huge boom on walking meditation, one particular walking meditation, where people from all creeds, from all beliefs, going now, and becomes very big, and it's called the Camino de Santiago de Compostela. Buddhists go, Christians go, Jews go, Muslims go, atheists go, people go who don't even know why they go, or they read Paulo, they read the book from Paulo Coelho, the dramatic shamanic thing with the sword and whatever. It's not like this. But people suddenly start to discover this experience, what the teachers teach us, to walk with the bag. And the bag we'll be carrying makes a lot. The Buddha didn't took anything on his path. Mm. He was always made nothing, just trusting. And the interesting is Yeshua did the same. And he says to his disciples also, he sends them out into the world not to convert people into a religion, but he sends them out to bring healing. You know, and not on what you are saying, but what you are doing, you will be recognized. Buddha does the same. He sends them out. And what is the out meaning? Now the Santiago is to then take anything with you and to go on a path is maybe the most biggest risk we do in our life without intention to come back. The moment you start to walk, you should not leave everything, take your bag, and you know, Santiago is now more or less 900 to 950 kilometers walk, and it's an amazing walk. But you don't see much. It's not such a nice outside environment. So in Spain, you're many times on the road. But what is going on inside, with somebody who meditates also, who does praxis, vipassana or whatever, it's an amazing experience because you are keeping this walk and you don't know how long it will take you to reach. Because to walk 900 kilometers, some people walk it in 1 month. Some people walk it in a half year because it's tough to walk every day. And the bag what you're carrying is also very important because every day, now Gopal, an Israeli friend of mine, he made 400 kilometers on foot and he had a big bag full of stuff and slowly, and he's an old papa, he knows the secrets, but he's in my age, we like to have a few things with us. So we take a little bit too much with us, and on the way, slowly, you empty your bag. You're hiding it under the carpet in the sanghas where you stop for the night. You know, you're only allowed to sleep there if you are having a passport. Passport is a card where you get stamped everywhere that you are really pellegrino, that you're pilgrim. If not, they don't let you sleep. And everywhere you leave something because the bag is too heavy. Hmm. And the bag outside is the bag we're carrying within. It's the opposite, it's actually just a mirror of what we have within. The bags we are carrying, all the traumas, the fears, the anger with family, religion, what they put on us, structures they put on us, pressures and making family, or whatever, you need children, why you don't make children, or whatever, and why you don't take a wife, and whatever, why you don't become a part of our religious group, and why you're so far away, so our bag. And when we go meditating, slowly, we empty that bag. And it's a hard walk. And when you're walking it, for normal people who don't go like we do now, sitting in a sangha and meditating, it's an amazing way, and I have met people from all kinds, from professors to housewife to mother to father or whatever, walking the Camino and learning to let go. You saved me to take just the bag and walk, you know, to make a purpose on the way. And when you're arriving in the metta, in the end, there is you start to cry, and then Gopal says, and then he said to me, he said, I was thinking about why people are crying when they're reaching the metta, the metta in Italian vuol dire the goal, because you're realizing that the walk is finished, and you cry because you're not still walking, and many people just keep walking. Mm-hmm. Because you get addicted to the walk, because it comes freedom when you let go. I think I have said enough for today, but when you let go, there's freedom coming. There's nothing to fear there outside. Mm-hmm. There is nothing who can harm you, actually, deep within. It's just freedom to let go.
It's a quite appropriate statement to finish with. I will just check with you one more thing. Quest of me. I mean, if you're willing to sing for us one song, I brought Dasi's guitar with me. If you feel like, great, and if not, we can. It would be great also to finish with a moment of silences.
Embarrassed now. I think I took enough of your space now, so I prefer actually just to be a little bit to finish in silence.
Yeah, so let's have a moment of silence.
Mm.